Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to this week's Living Torah, and I want to thank you guys for your continued prayers, your support, your letters of encouragement. We hit a milestone yesterday. My mother's been with us for 1 month, and it's been interesting, to say the least. Just let me say to you, that if you have a parent or parents that are with you in this walk, that understand what you're doing, call them, write them, send them a card, hug them, whatever you got to do. But if you have parents, which, you know, myself and Kathy, our parents have never understood what we're doing. And it's not they don't want to, they just don't really have a box for it. And so if you have, this is a word to you, if you have parents that or family that is with you on this, just tell them how much you appreciate that. Okay, a lot of the things going on around us in the world today, I'm not really going to get into that too much. We do have Passover coming up, and this is going to be an interesting Passover for us here because of a number of things. And one of the things is I've kind of alluded to it in previous weeks, I believe, that one of my goals this year is to really put Messiah back into the Passover or into the festivals, all the festivals, because there's been this kind of a pendulum swing that I've seen. You know, there was a day that we were all excited about Christmas and Easter and the person of Messiah and all of this, and then we came to this place of the written Torah, kind of a pendulum swing over to this side. And I've been to many festivals and have looked around and said, where's Messiah in the midst of this? And so it's just, to me, I mean, this is something I've been desiring to do and something I've been trying to do in festivals that I've been a part of. But it's just really come to a head this year that I'm just making a concerted effort right now to put Messiah, you know, he should be the focus of everything. And so right now, in fact, I spent all day yesterday recording, and at the end of the day, just wasn't working. I've got this, I've got 4 pages of notes on this, trying to put this into 2 CDs. And finally got it yesterday afternoon late. Spent a lot of time, and my voice is still a bit hoarse today. But I hit the everything, and the microphone, something had gone wrong in the microphone. So I just said, forget it, go back. And so when I turn the camera off today, we're going to go back into that. And so it's fascinating. It is, I have this year, you know, I've always seen Messiah in the Passover. But this year, it just going through the Gospels like I have, it's an exciting thing to see. And it's very humbling to what he has done for us. And so this will be released into this month for our partners. It'll be 2 CDs, and it's, you know, it's one of those things that I feel is an important message. Our monthly CDs, this is how we're supported as a ministry. But as always, if you cannot afford, and I say this, and we don't, you know, we don't ask for a financial statement or anything. We just trust people in this. But if you can't afford those CDs, then you email me, and I'll get it to you one way or another. We'll figure it out. But it's not about the money. It's about the message, and the message is him. And I figure he's got that all taken care of. So that's the deal. If you can afford to, you know, there's information on our website. I won't go any farther than that. So this week, let's go to back into Matthew. And I finished last week in Matthew chapter 16, verse 19. And there's one verse left there in this paragraph. It's interesting because, you know, I've got a number of commentaries that I've collected through the years. And once in a while, just for kicks, I think, I go back and I look at these commentaries on specific words and verses. And this is one of those verses that virtually all the commentaries, they just skip over. You know, when you're writing a commentary, you can hit this verse and over to that verse and then, you know, move on. But my commitment to you a year and a half ago is we were going to go through each verse. And so we're going to read each verse, which means I've got to have a commentary on each verse. And I either have to make up something or just tell you I don't know. And there's been verses along the way that I've said that. But this is a verse that I think there's some very interesting things here, though most of the commentaries, the commentators just kind of gloss right over the top. And it's... At the end, it's after this, you know, Yeshua is there in Caesarea Philippi, and Peter makes this incredible declaration, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living Elohim." And once again, the people that day, and we see this in the Passover message I'm doing this month, the people of the day had a teaching about the Messiah being the Son of God, or the manifestation of. In Judaism today, it is said, well, we don't believe that Messiah will be, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh in the flesh. Well, that's what Judaism, for the most part, believes today. That's not necessarily what Judaism believed 2,000 years ago. 2,000 years ago, they had a very different theology than what they do in many cases today. And this is a across-the-board statement. It's not, this is not everybody in Judaism, because as if you've ever looked at it, Judaism has as many, we could say denominations, as many sects as Christianity or the Messianic. You know, why? Because it's made up of people. So here, Peter makes this statement, and at the end, Yeshua says something very interesting. Then he warned the Talmudim not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. Now, why would he do that? I mean, this goes against everything that I was raised with. That, you know, you were to go out and knock on doors and, you know, go to the beach and hand out tracts, or you were to go to the mall and, you know, you were to go to anybody and everybody that would listen, and even if they wouldn't listen, you would make them listen. I remember going to a Promise Keepers meeting, and we were up in Atlanta, Georgia. This friend of mine who's a pastor is very evangelistic in his approach. We're on a subway. And here's this guy, he's kind of the punk rock type of a guy. And this pastor starts talking to him about Jesus. And it was obvious that this punk rock guy was not ready for this conversation. Now, was this pastor friend of mine wrong? And I'm not going to say he was wrong. But this young man was... And it wasn't because he was wearing black and he had he had rings coming out of most of his, you know, everywhere and all this stuff. It wasn't that. But he was not prepared for this message. But yet this friend of mine, who just can, you know, just hammering it, just trying to hammer this message into someone that was not ready for the message. There's an important thing for us to understand, that when it comes to faith in Messiah, when it comes to a person being transformed into that new creation by faith in Messiah, and I still believe in that aspect of this, of receiving Messiah as our Redeemer, we have to understand that flesh and blood cannot reveal that to a person. Well, it can to a way, to the place that you can argue someone, and please kind of see what I'm trying to go with this term, you can argue someone into the kingdom, and then someone else will argue them out. It's like someone that comes to the door, somebody has no foundation at all, and this week, a Mormon comes to the door and they argue him into the kingdom of Mormon. And next week, the Jehovah Witness comes by and they argue him into the kingdom of Jehovah Witness and out of the kingdom of Mormonism. And the next week the Baptists come, and the next week the Methodists come. No, the Methodists don't do that. And the next week the Charismaniacs come. And the person hasn't changed at all, because they've just simply been argued from one place to another. It is a transformation of their flesh, of their answers to things. Oh yes, I believe. Da, 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 da. But the demons believe and tremble. Remember that, okay? They're not transformed on the inside. Another aspect, and this happens, this has happened, I guess, probably more in generations gone by, but I remember the stories of the early Pentecostal movement. And you had people, evangelists, that come in, and the old fire and brimstone. You remember Granny Walton was famous for loving this, if you've ever watched The Waltons. We did when Kathy's mother was here a lot. But Granny Walton was famous for loving the old fire and brimstone kind of a preaching. Scaring people will not get them into the kingdom either, any more than argument. It has to be something that is revealed to them by the Spirit of Elohim. And that is something that's out of our control. It's something that none of us understands, why you stand in front of two people on the street and one person is open to the message of Messiah, the other one is totally closed. I've never understood that. What's our message? What is our responsibility in this? Look for people that are open. Look for people who the Father is dealing with through whatever circumstance and situation. Look for those people and come into cooperation with the Spirit of Elohim in desiring to lead people to this place of a saving knowledge. And I use that term. There's, you know, we're kind of, through the years, we're still trying to figure out these terms. And I say saving knowledge, and all of a sudden that one kind of rings very fake and very very empty, because it's not a knowledge. Knowledge doesn't save a person. Knowledge doesn't redeem a person. Knowledge doesn't bring a person into the kingdom. It is something that happens inside of them. Our responsibility is to walk with our eyes open, looking for people that the Father is working in their lives, and then, you know, be willing. So I hope all that makes sense. It may not. I may have muddied the waters a whole lot more. The second reason I believe that he says this to his disciples is something called the Passover plot. And there is a group of people that try to disprove the events that happened at the end of Messiah's life, saying that he orchestrated all of this. Now, in a very brief reading, it doesn't take the pouring into the reading of the scriptures I've done last quite a while here, as far as the Gospels go, the accounts of those last days. It takes just a very very casual reading, actually, to see that there's no way that Messiah could have orchestrated these events. He did not make anything happen. In fact, for the most part, he stands silent as a sheep going to the, as a lamb going to the slaughter. He doesn't orchestrate anything all the way through the whole events of those days leading up to it. Up to his death, and how do you then orchestrate a resurrection? That one doesn't make a whole lot of sense either, does it? So the very thought that Yeshua is trying to orchestrate this, he's telling his disciples, listen, I don't want you telling people what I've just said here. Let the Spirit of Elohim control the situations that are going to arise in the coming days. That's pretty good counsel for all of us to go by, is let Elohim, Yahweh, let Him direct our steps. They go to some interesting places, do they not? From that time on, Yeshua made it clear to His Talmudim that He had to go to Jerusalem, endure much suffering at the hands of the elders, the head Kohanim, the Pharisees. These men, David Stern, are not teaching Torah. And that He had to be put to death, but on the third day He had to be raised to life. Kepha took Him aside and began rebuking Him. Heaven be merciful, Lord Adonai. By no means will this happen to you. But Yeshua turned His back on Kepha, saying, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an obstacle in my path, because your thinking is from a human perspective, not from Elohim's perspective." The theme of these verses can be wrapped up into one word, Shema. Hear. Hear with intelligence, and hear with a desire to do something about what you're going to hear. And this is the reason that Peter is the one that is brought to the forefront here, because very basic Hebrew, you understand that the word Shimon Kepha, Simon Peter, his word, or his name Shimon, is the same root, it comes from the same root as the word Shema. So that's why he's the one that is brought to the place to kind of bring in this concept that is being taught here of we must learn to Shema. And Peter of all people, Kepha, of all people, needed to learn how to Shema. But don't point fingers at him. I think it's something all of us need to do. Now, let me bring out something here. I don't think I've taught this for a long time. There are three voices that we are able to hear as we walk through life. We can hear the voice of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. We can hear Satan's voice. And then we can hear our voice. And this is the one that trips most people up, is that we hear something and we want, and people want to attribute this to, well, I heard from God. Well, if I believed that the Father spoke, everything that I have heard people say that He spoke, He is absolutely, without a doubt, the most confused being that has ever been or ever will be. Because I have had people come to me through the years and say, God told me this and God told me that. And I've looked at them and thinking, do you really believe? I had a person one time that told, well, you know, God told me that I didn't have to eat kosher. Well, that means that He just contradicted what He already said in His Word. See, what had they heard? They had heard probably their own voice. Because our own voice is driven by our own desires. And sometimes our mind can trick us to a place of our own desire and blaming the Father the whole time as we're going there. And so we need to be very careful about those things. So how do we discern these voices that we hear from time to time? Absolutely. One of the very, very best is right here, knowing the Word, okay? If we are reading, we're studying, one of the things that some of the guys of our group out here, and in fact some others I've asked to join in, is this month we're reading the book of Proverbs together. And so, you know, Proverbs has 31 chapters, just a real easy no-brainer here. Many months have 31 days. And so this month, coming up on Passover specifically, we are reading Proverbs. And today, Wednesday morning, we'll be all of us together. We haven't really kept in contact on this. It's just a matter of, hey, you reading your verses? Yeah, I'm reading my verse. Okay, you doing it? Yeah, I'm doing it too. But we are into Proverbs. Today we'll be in Proverbs chapter 6. And it is amazing, amazing what is in these words. And you want wisdom of how to walk through life? It's in the book of Proverbs. It's an amazing book. And so maybe you want to join us, or maybe you want to begin this at some point, you know, a month down the road or something. Maybe we're only 5-6 chapters, you know, 7 or 8 chapters by the time you listen to this. So maybe you want to join us in that endeavor. And it will help us to discern which voice we are listening to. Because Yeshua goes on and he says in these, let me just go back to it a little bit. Heaven be merciful, Adonai, by no means will this happen. And of course, so many people have said, oh, that stupid Simon Peter, one more time he got things wrong. You know, I can't go there. I can't go there with that group of people that is always wanting to put Peter down, because in the end, I mean, this is an incredible man that would do some incredible things. And yeah, he had a lot of rough edges that needed to be worked out. He needed to work through a lot of things in life, but don't we all? And at least he was out there on the forefront trying. I got to give him that much credit, okay? Though he blew it a few times, he's a model for us. That even though we mess up, there is redemption. There is redemption in repentance. And so I would imagine that, you know, here's Kepha. We're up at Caesarea Philippi. And he's kind of walking around going, hey guys, you hear that? I'm the one that got it. You know, Messiah came to me, you know, and I'm the one. I'm the one, baby, that had the confession. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 18, I believe it is. Pride comes before a fall. Anytime that you and I believe that we have arrived. Wow, we can get prideful about so many things, can we not? Consider, what do you get prideful about? You overcome something in life, you know, and when you become proud of it. I've done that. We overcome, you know, the list can be endless. It's not about the things, okay? It's an amazing thing. We can even become proud of being humble. That's the funny one, you know, because you reach a place at some point in life through situations of humility, and then you one day wake up and go, wow, I'm very humble. And now we become proud of it, and we start the whole process of humbling us one more time. And so Peter, because he's in that place, and we weren't there, so we don't really know what exactly happened, but what appears that happened is that Peter became a bit prideful over his statement, you know, I've got this down, I'm doing it. And then the next thing we hear is, wow, I mean, Peter's trying to find a rock. Not to base his name upon, but a rock to crawl under, to get away from everything. And then Messiah says this, you are an obstacle in my path. Yeshua knew where he had to go. He had made it very clear. He was trying to prepare the disciples for what was ahead of them, because he knew what was ahead of him. I do not believe that he had a Broadway script on this one. I don't believe that if cornered, that he could have told you, well, you know, we're going to go to Jerusalem, we're going to have a meal, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, then I'm going to be before Anna, then I'm going to be before Caiaphas, then Pilate, then Herod. I don't believe that he knew the exact things that he was going to go through, because the details of what he was going to go through was not the important thing in the process. What was important was the redemption of mankind, the pressure, the sin that he was going to have to bear during that time. That is what was important. That's what it was starting to drive him right now. He knew not the events he was going to have to go through, but he knew the struggles he was going to have to go through. He knew the torture he was going to have to go through. And so, for Peter to come to him and say, "Hey, you know, that's not going to happen," was Satan's plan. See, there was two plans happening. There was two ways. I bring this out in this month's message. There was two directions Messiah could go. He could go with the plan of the Father, which was to go to the execution stake. Or he could go with the plan of Satan, which was to save his own life and lose everyone else's. He could have gone. He could have walked away. At any moment during this, he could have walked away, lived the rest of his life out, and come to the end for nothing. And we'll see this in the next verses. So Peter is a block. He's kind of, Peter is standing over here against the will of Hashem. And Yeshua looks at him and says, "You are an obstacle in my path because your thinking is from a human perspective, not from Elohim's perspective." There may be three voices, but there's only two perspectives in this world. I'm very blessed in a couple of things. One is, and this doesn't, for some others, this doesn't seem like a blessing a lot of times, but I'm very black and white in things. There's not a lot of gray area in my thinking processes. I just, you know, that's just the way it is. And that's the way I've been for a long time. And I just, you know, it's like I'd rather Yeshua, or in the book of Revelation, I'd rather be hot or cold instead of lukewarm. And I like that verse. You know, if I wasn't over here, I'd just go ahead and go over there. But I don't want to walk the center line. And so I see this as, there are two perspectives in the world. I don't see the gray area in here in the middle. The problem is that we have, let's go back to the voice. We have the voice and will of the Father over here on this side. Then we have the voice and will of the enemy over on this side. You and I are in the middle. And the prize in this world, in this struggle between the Father and the enemy, the prize is which side we're on. Excuse me, which side we default to. Which side we end up on most of the time. This is a very personal question that each of us have to answer. But given situations in life that come up, which side do you default to? If you're walking a fence line and you fall off, is it your tendency in a natural sense? Okay, let's say that we put a balance beam out there. And we tell you to walk this balance beam. Would your tendency, if you walked it 10 times and didn't make it 10 times, would your tendency be to fall off to the right side or to fall off to the left side? A lot of that would depend on your focus. If we focus too much of our weight toward the right, we're going to fall off to the right. if we focus too much of our weight to the left, we're going to fall off to the left. The same holds true spiritually. Wherever we focus. Now, it should be our desire that in this balance beam that we always fall to the right. You know, when situations arise, let's say I could come up with 5,000 examples right now. Most of them will kind of pigeonhole into something. But I don't know which one to go to, because if I go to any of these things, then I'm going to miss out on everything else. But let's say that you're sitting down and you're watching a television program, something like that, okay? And I know not everybody has a TV, but for those that do, let's just... Cause this is the trap I get, right? Is I mention something like this, so the people that don't have a TV go, well, I don't have a TV, so I don't have to deal with this. Yeah, don't be so prideful about that. Let's just say, for instance, that you're at a friend's house, and you're watching a TV program, and all of a sudden the subject matter changes, and it's something that's not really appropriate. What is your normal tendency to do? Is it to just say, well, let's just cover our eyes during that time? Or is your tendency to say, let's turn that off? Which side do you go on to? We could talk about this from a medical standpoint. You know, do you look first to man's perspective, or to man's perspective, or Satan's perspective, or do you your tendency to look to God's perspective at things? In our general life and in how we live things out, which perspective do we go to? What's the default in our lives? And you know what? A lot of what we do is going to be... is going to come out of some very basic things. And that is our input. Okay? If our input default is all over here, then that's our tendency is where it's going to be. But if we put more of God in there, in our music, in our entertainment, even in our in what we read, in what we watch, in how we speak, okay, we can control some of this to where our tendency is more to, in a case like Peter is in, our tendency is more to default to and fall to the side of the Father's perspective, not to the other side, okay? And again, I just... Boy, that's one of those that to me is so many things that are happening there in these thoughts. It's very difficult for me to really put it all together. I'm pretty sure, you know. Let's bring one more up. Let's say, and this is something that happens a lot, in that somebody has been a part of a church setting for a long time, and then comes this realization that the Torah is not done away with. And then they're over here and they kind of ride the fence. And on Shabbat they're in a congregation, and then on Sunday they're in a church setting, and then during the week they kind of got a Bible study over here, and planning for Easter on this side, and then planning for Passover on this side with another group of people. It's double-minded. And what's going to end up happening is when situations like this arise, you're going to go to what is familiar, and you're going to go to kind of the side that's weighted. We need to have more input on the right side than we do on the other side. And hopefully that will make a difference, okay? Then Yeshua says this. Then Yeshua told his Talmudim, "If anyone wants to come after me, let him say no to himself. Wow. Take up his execution stake and keep following me." Realization of this came many years ago, in which I had heard many people speak on this subject of, you know, you need to take up your cross daily and follow him, da 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 da. Finally, one message that I heard years ago, I can't remember who it was from, they kind of put this whole thing to just, I mean, cut through the chase. Let's get to the point here. And he said, when Messiah picked up his execution stake, he went to Golgotha and died. He didn't parade it around. I've seen people through the years that, you know, somebody has an illness, somebody has a wayward child, someone has a financial burden or an emotional burden or something like that, and they begin to wear it to the place that I've had people say, well, that's just my cross that I've been called to bear. And they become like the guy who was at Arthur Blessed that traveled around the world with this cross. And I'm not saying anything against Arthur Blessed, but he had this wooden cross, and he began to carry it all over the world, kind of as a witnessing tool, as an evangelistic tool. We're not called to carry a cross and show it off to everybody. We are called to take up the same execution stake that Messiah took up and die to ourselves. Die to our own thought processes that are over there in the wrong place. Die to some of our own pleasures, some of our own desires, some of our own, the things that we, I need that. Do we really? There's so much in these verses that, you know, if I go and I give examples in a lot of this, I'm going to pigeonhole it. And what I'd rather you do is take kind of the surface teaching that I'm doing right now, and then you, when you turn this video off, sit there for a while and look back over these verses and say, okay, how are these verses being played out in my life today? For whoever wants to save his own life will destroy it, and whoever destroys his life for my sake will find it. Now, this word destroy, I'm not real sure is a very good translation, because it's not about destroying your life. It's about losing our own desires so that we can have his desire. Okay, that word destroy just doesn't ring true here. That he who wants to save his own life will lose it. I need to lose my desires so that his desires can overtake. Okay, if I'm making a plan for something, I need to say, you know, is this going to put a smile upon his face or a smile upon mine? And which smile is more important to me? Okay, I'm wanting to please him before I want to please myself. What good will it do someone if he gains the whole world but forfeits his life? Or what can a person give in exchange for his life? Life. Explain this one. I mean, when you start talking about life, you know, how many books have been written? How many college courses on psychology and all those other ologies have been done on this? the meaning of life. And I'm going to cover this in about 5 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. The truth is, to me, in my black and white world, look around you. This is not reality. This life that we have today is these few years. My mother is just, she's looking at turning 90 here in a couple of months. Kathy's mother just turned 90. I got an email from someone that an old friend of mine died just the other day. He was in his 30s. Is this life that we have here, is it really worth investing everything that we have to secure this around us? Should we look more at eternity than we do at what is happening today? If we look at the things that are going on in this world today, it's, and I use this word, and some people don't understand what I'm saying, this is all insignificant as compared to what is going to be. Because this is going to end. One day, for all of us, this is going to end. Whether it be by death, by the return of Messiah, this world system that our flesh desires to be so involved in, striving for all the time, this is going to end so the reality can take place. To me, I kind of liken it to going to Disney World. Ever been to Disney World or Disneyland? And that little boat that you get on, you know, it's a small world. Okay, you got that in your head the rest of the day, right? You get on this little boat, and it kind of runs you through these different aspects of the world. And you see, you know, it's designed to where you see everything from China to Louisiana to, to Swaziland. You know, you go through all these little puppets and things, and you're on this boat for, 5 minutes maybe? And then you get off the boat. And you walk out into life again, right? For many people, that 5 minute boat ride is reality. That 5 minute boat ride is what many people spend their whole life for. Not understanding that that's fantasy. That in the end is nothing. That which you strive for during that 5 minutes is a vapor. And now we have reality. It's a good thing, I believe, to continue to consider, at least, that what am I building my life for? Am I building my life for the here and now? Am I preparing everything for fantasy land? For a little boat on this, a small world? Or am I really setting myself up for the life that is going to be? The life that is actually reality. A life that is eternal. A life that doesn't end. For the Son of Man will come in His Father's glory with His angels, and He will repay everyone according to His conduct. This does not say that when He comes, He's going to repay just the sinners. Okay? It doesn't say He's going to repay all of those that are outside the family of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It says He's going to repay everyone. for their conduct. I was reading or listening to something the other day. I can't remember how it came about. It really doesn't matter. I was reading, so that's what it was. And this person came from a very, their background was very Christian, in that they said, well, in the Old Testament was all about man's performance. And the New Testament is all about Jesus' performance. Okay, this is the words they're using. And so in the Old Testament, it mattered what you did, because everything was about your performance and your blessings, the blessings or curses that you walked in on a daily basis were the result of your own performance. But in the New Testament, it doesn't matter what we do, because it's all about His performance. And He's perfect, so His perfection is in us, and it doesn't matter what we do on a daily basis. Tell that to the police officer when they pull you over for speeding. Okay? That doesn't make sense. So He's not just speaking to people that are outside the kingdom. He's not just speaking to people that are outside the family. He's not speaking to people that are going to be judged in that manner. He's speaking to everyone. That each one of us is going to give an account for our lives. In Messiah or outside of Messiah, we're still going to give an account for what we do. I don't understand that exactly. Now, if you do, congratulations, mazel tov, okay? I know that there's a place in Messiah that my sins, okay, my when I repent, my sins are covered because of His blood. They're atoned for, okay? But there's still a place. See, if I just decided to turn this camera off at the end of this message, never turn it back on again, never go out and speak, just kind of become a hermit, and there's some days that I'd like to do that, to be quite honest with you, I would have to give an account for that. I know what He's called me to today, and I know that I will give an account for what I am called to. It has nothing to do over here with the issue of sin and righteousness. It is, I'm called to a purpose. And how I do that, I have an opportunity with every message that I record to just, it's Wednesday morning, I just need to go over there and turn a video and let's look at the scriptures. Or I can throw my life into it. Okay, maybe that's a good example. I can throw everything that I have into it and pray. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I know that in the end of the day, when the Son of Man returns in His Father's glory with His angels, that I will give an account for how I teach. The fervor that I teach, or the laziness that I teach from. I will give an account for that. Yes, I tell you, there are some people standing here who will not experience death until they see the Son of Man coming in His kingdom. Let's close with this one. Let's finish up. Who knows what's going through these disciples' lives right here? They're trying to deal with this, okay? He has just told them a moment earlier that it is necessary that He's going to go to Jerusalem, He's going to suffer, and He's going to be raised from the dead again. You know, did they hear that? Not much, probably. They didn't hear much of it. And now, on the other side, He's saying to them, there's some of you that are here that are not going to see death until the kingdom comes. I think they're listening more on this side of it. I don't think they... Great, the phone... Kathy just left and the phone's ringing, so Gotta take it. I just hope it doesn't hit the answer machine over here. So let me wait until it keeps going, and hopefully it's going to answer in just a moment. And Kathy just went out to see Daniel. He's working somewhere else right now. So okay, that hopefully did it with the answer machine. So I think they're listening now more on this side than they were on that side. Okay. These are things over there they don't quite want to hear. Oh, wait a minute, the kingdom, there's some of us that are not going to die until we see him coming in the kingdom. Now they're all listening. Why? Because their eyes are on, we're going to see Messiah ben David. Okay, this is the whole process that's going on in this day. Is they're not looking for Messiah, son of Joseph, the suffering servant. They're looking for Messiah, son of David, the conquering king. They're not seeing, wait a minute, before the nation can be redeemed, I must be redeemed. Before this can be a community thing, it must be personal. This is one of the traps that is happening today, I feel, in the greater Exodus movement, is people are still coming to the place of, oh, we need to be redeemed from this system. We need to leave the United States and all of these things, without ever looking in the mirror going, wait a minute, before I'm ready for that, I've got some things here that I need to deal with. The disciples were the flesh and blood the same as we are. They, as well as most of us, desire for everybody else to be, you know, dealt with. Instead of looking in the mirror and saying, Father, please deal with me. Deal with my lack of hearing. Deal with me when I don't think from the right perspective. Deal with me when my perspective, when my actions are not in line with yours. Deal with me before you deal with everybody else. A little different perspective, maybe, of those verses. Now, next week, we're going to see that the words of Yeshua come true. Because, as he said, there were those standing in front of him that would not see death until they saw the Son of Elohim, of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, coming in his glory. Interesting enough, we're going to get to those verses just a little bit prior to Passover. And we're going to bring Moshe back into the mix of things next week. So with that, Shavuot Tov. I pray you have a wonderful, blessed, prosperous week. And remember, prepare for Passover. It's coming. It's going to be here before you know it. If we don't get involved in it, you know, it's just a couple, 20 days away, right? Or less than 20 days away, something like that right now. So, another one of those things, you know, don't just wait until the last minute. And, oh, wait a minute, it's Passover. What are we going to do tonight? You know, no. Prepare for this special, special event. You never know. You never know what can happen at a Passover because of the days that we live in these days. So with that, may Hashem bless you. And Bezrat Hashem, we'll see you again next week. Yivarechecha Adonai b'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panav elecha b'yichunecha Yisa Adonai Sem lecha shalom.